Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guests on With Respect are two people, Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins. They are two people of extremely different backgrounds, but who have gone through some tough times and have managed to come out of it on the other side of those tough times with something special. They are the co-authors of the book Convicted, and we'll be talking all about what the meaning of that title is, and in their lives. Once again, this is John Smetanka with Andrew Collins and Jamel McGee, With Respect. So how are you guys today?
Doing well, John. How are you doing?
Really? All right, good. So tell me about yourselves. We start off with, who are you? Where are you from originally? Jamel, how about you?
I am Jamel McGee. I'm from, born and raised, Benton Harbor, Michigan. Been living here pretty much all my whole life.
Where'd you go to school?
Went to school to Benton Harbor High. It was kind of rough there, but we managed to do it. Benton Harbor, and then from there I went to jail.
All right. Okay, that's a good, interesting. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm from the booming metropolis of Fountain, Michigan, a village of 100 people, so about 3 hours north of where Jamel grew up in northern Michigan, and moved down here to Benton Harbor in 2003.
What brought you down here?
I had just graduated the police academy, and I put in resumes at 80 or 90 different police departments. And back in 2003, they were in a hiring freeze. Not a lot of places were hiring. And then Benton Harbor called, and I got an interview and then a second interview, and then was hired by the Benton Harbor Police Department.
Why law enforcement? What brought you into that? I mean, Fountain, 100 people.
Right.
Where is it located?
But right in the middle of the mitten, over, I guess, more towards the west side by Lake Michigan. So it's about the closest big city is Grand Rapids, and it's about an hour north of Grand Rapids.
All right. Why did you go from that small town?
Yeah.
What was your family like?
How hillbilly do we want to get? Let's see. There's a couple different ways we can talk about my family. I had I lived with my mom my whole life, and then my biological father bounced out of my life when I was about a year old, and then who I called dad was in my life for the first 15 years. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the reason I became a police officer, was the relationship with him. So, but more on my family. My grandparents lived right next door. We lived on a small inland lake, and we kind of owned one quarter of that lake. It was a lot of my family right there on the same hill. So grandma and grandpa lived right next door. So I could go over to dinner with them at 5 p.m. after I got off the bus, and I could make it home by 6:30 when we ate dinner. So I was a well-fed child. So a lot of family right there on the hill. And then mom and dad were young. I remember being at my mom's 21st birthday. She had me when she was 15.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I can remember serving drinks. My dad teaching me how to suck the foam off the top of the beer because nobody liked foam on their beer. So that was my first experience with the party atmosphere. And then they had a pretty volatile relationship. So cops ended up getting called one time, and the police officer that showed up brought peace to my home, and I remember like being terrified of my dad. He was kind of a monster in my world. He worked third shift, so I didn't have to see him that much. But on the weekends, I would have to walk on pins and needles. And then, you know, verbal assaults towards me and my brother, but physical assaults on my mom that we witnessed for most of our childhood. So, like I said, one night a cop got called and he showed up, and he wasn't mean to my dad and he wasn't aggressive towards anybody. He just showed up and his presence brought peace. And I remember from that point on, I never doubted I was going to be a police officer.
So when did you first start your training?
I was 18 years old, fresh out of high school. Took that summer off after high school. And then in September, there's a community college right by where I grew up. And they have a, you'd call it the academy, but it's a two-year tracking program where you get an associate's degree in criminal justice. So I did that two-year program, and then also a year in between, I did a corrections certificate that made me, you know, certified to work inside jails and prisons as well. Mm-hmm. So I came out with a major in criminal justice with a minor in corrections.
So you said that you applied when you got all through that to about 80 to 90 places?
Right.
And how many places were you accepted in or get a call back?
I interviewed at two.
Which ones were they?
Traverse City.
All right.
And Benton Harbor.
All right. And you chose Benton Harbor.
Traverse City did not choose me.
So by process of elimination, that's where you ended up.
Yeah. Right? I think Traverse City probably saw stuff in my youth and in my immaturity that they had a plethora of options to go with as far as people who wanted to work for them. And Benton Harbor has kind of been known in the police community as like a stepping stone. So people would put 2 years in, you know, and then that's a resume booster and move on. So it was like the way it was described to me is they were constantly turning over. So every couple of years they were hiring, you know, 5 to 8 people. And that was one of those 2 year cycles. So,
all right. So now in your life, we've got you through high school. You're taking a job at Benton Harbor High School, Benton Harbor Police Department. So what year was that?
2003. July 11th, 2003 was my start day.
All right. Jamel, how about you? Tell me about yourself, your family, mom, dad.
Rough. Yeah, I'm the youngest of six in our household. Mom, dad, they was all right, but they was going through their little skedaddle of divorce or whatever, and mom in turn took that out on us, and it wasn't pretty. It was rough. It was a rough childhood growing up.
You say us, and you had brothers and sisters?
Yes. Yes, I'm the youngest of six.
Youngest of six, but are they boys, girls?
5 boys, 1 girl.
Oh, the poor thing, all by herself.
And she was the oldest.
And she was the oldest. In other
so
words,
poor so them.
So you poor them. All right. So where you went to Benton Harbor High School, but where'd you go to grammar school?
It was bar school.
All right.
Not too far from my house, actually walking distance. Went to bar school, grew up playing basketball, loved playing basketball and that. And got into a lot of little things I shouldn't have been in trouble, messing with the wrong people, hanging around the wrong people.
All right, what do you mean by the wrong people?
People that I knew that was into mischievous stuff.
All right.
And I knew better. But I still chose to hang there because I figured, hey, I ain't got nothing to do with that. That ain't my business. But I end up being caught right up in it. Just hanging with those people kind of detoured me.
All right, so hanging, what would they do? What do you, I mean, you're with these guys and they're doing stuff. What kind of stuff would they be doing?
Drinking, smoking, partying, running around, carrying guns, everything.
So in my mind, I'm picturing like a 16-year-old Jamel, but how old, how old were you when that was happening?
Oh, no, I was much younger then. I was 12, 13, those ages. So my childhood pretty much was in the streets.
Yeah.
Because in my mom's home, we didn't want to be there because of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just took to the streets pretty much.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You could just say some of those guys are just people that accepted you, whatever, you know. However you came, or they didn't judge you, or they didn't know nothing about you. They just was like, okay, yeah, you cool, come hang with us. And you know, they just basically was somewhat like of a role model, or just some people that you can just go hang around, and then it just to escape what's going on at home.
So you got some problems at home. You got a mom and dad are going through a divorce or unhappiness, and then they ends up in a divorce. You got five brothers and a sister, or four brothers and a sister.
All right.
And you've got, I got to get out of this. I got to get out of this house. Too much noise, too much tension. Mm-hmm. You end up with a bunch of guys. How many guys would you hang around with? Was it like 5, 2, 100, what? Mm-hmm.
It was about 2 or 3 people.
And okay.
That's 500. No way. yeah, it was like 2 or 3 people, and you know, they would be into some stuff, and they would try to pull me in as well, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go in. Except for one day I did, right at the high school I was supposed to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends, they came over that night and wanted to go out, go hang out. And my dad specifically said, don't do it. Just stay here. And I'm like, nah, I'm finna go. You know, I'll be all right. I ain't into what they into. We just going to hang out for a minute and I'll be back. That hangout cost me 3 years of my life then.
We're going to talk about that in a minute, but there's one other thing I want to ask you about. Everybody's got somebody in their life, and this is going to be applied to you, Andrew, as well. Everybody's got somebody who they get their direction from, whether it's good or bad, you know, mm-hmm. up, down. Sometimes it's your mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's an uncle or aunt or a teacher or a priest or religious or something. Somebody somewhere has got a kid grows up looking at them and saying, I want to be like that person.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start with you, Andrew. Who was that person for you?
Yeah, I think in different seasons it was different people. You know, like I said, that night that officer showed up, he was that person. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know who it was. I didn't know him personally. We didn't know their family. I still to this day have no clue who that man was, but I wanted to be just like him. Other seasons in my life, my grandfather, who lived right next door, you know, I wanted to be, he was the epitome to me of an upstanding man. Like he worked hard for his family. He afforded my grandma the opportunity to invest in her kids and grandkids by being present. Like I wanted to be that guy who, you know, took care of his family like that mm-hmm. financially and spiritually. That was kind of my grandpa's role. So, there was seasons I wanted to be like him, but then there was seasons I was hanging with my boys that I wanted to be like my friend who was riding his moped in the snow and, you know, stealing cigarettes from his mom and smoking cigarettes and stealing liquor. And, you know, so, I mean, I can stand on both sides of the fence and see where I wanted to be like somebody else, both mm-hmm. positive and negative.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Jamil? Who would that be with you?
Oh no. I would say my grandmother, because I learned a lot of my stuff from her, and partially my dad as well, because that's how I learned all my mechanic
skills
from.
Yeah.
Yeah, from him. And between those two guys, I mean, they definitely. Especially my grandma, she was the light in my life.
You know, that is something that is Before I go into this, I want to tell you guys that everybody has somebody. And you're right. Sometimes it's one person. Sometimes it's another in different parts of your life. And so I have the same thing. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about that night that everything changes your lives. All right? This is John Smetanka, one with respect, and we are talking to Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins, who together have written a book called Convicted. It's a story of their individual lives and how they came together and what that meant, what that has meant, their experiences. It's wild. It's interesting. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins, who are the authors of a book called Convicted, dealing with their lives separately. And the way you wrote it is interesting. The way that they put whoever worked with you on this is it's back and forth between the two of you throughout your lives. And that's an intriguing way of looking at the story of somebody's life, two people especially.
Leaves you hungry for the next chapter, doesn't it, John?
You know, it does in a way. in a way it does, yeah. I've done shows with a number of people who are recapitulating their lives. They're looking back and saying, you know, what happened to me? Mm-hmm. And the back and forth between two people who are friends are two people who interacted with each other in a negative way. It's fascinating because you learn something about humanity, but you also learn something about their tough times. Because everybody's got them.
That's right. Yes.
Everybody's got tough times. And there's got to be a way to get through them. And you're going to tell us, first of all, about the tough times, and then you're going to tell us about how you got through it. So, Jamel, you said it was the worst night of your life, that when you said, I want to go out and hang with the guys for a while, and Dad said no, and you did it anyway. What happened? Yeah.
That was a different time before this.
Oh, okay.
But the night that me and Andrew had our meeting, it was, I was at home. And I was waiting to start my own business, my car wash. And and I did a trial run, you know, that March, and just to see how everything would pan out for me for the summer. And it went really well. So I was like, okay, yeah, let me do this. And by me waiting to open up the shop until May, I was sitting at home just playing games and just living life, waiting on to open the shop. And my cousins came over and boom, it just started trickling from there. I know what they was into, but I didn't think, you know, they was into it at this particular time, or they was bringing it to the house where I'm at. So
what were they into?
Dealing drugs.
Okay. What kind of drugs?
Crack.
Okay.
So, sitting there with them, they go, my son was just being born. He was born already at this time, but I hadn't seen him yet. So it was, his mom was just calling me and was going to bring him over that day. And I was like, so I ran to the store. I wanted to go to the store. So I asked them, my cousins, would they take me to the store? Because I had just got pulled over that very morning for driving on suspended license. And I just didn't want to deal with that. I didn't want to get another ticket or get my car towed this time. So I just asked my cousins, would they take me to the store? My cousin said he couldn't, but his friend Will would. So Will was like, yeah, I'll take you. Give me a second. They waited a minute, and then he was like, all right, let's go. I'm ready. So we get in the car and we take off, headed to the store. And on our way there, he was like, hey, let me see your phone real fast. And I gave him my phone and I went inside the store.
You went inside?
Yep, I went inside the store shopping for all my little goodies. And then when I come out the store, this guy was approaching me talking about he was a cop. I didn't know who he was at first. And where's the dope? And I'm like, what? I don't have no dope. What are you talking about? And I kept trying to walk around him. And he reached in his shirt and pulled out the badge. And I was like, oh, boy, I still don't got nothing. But what do you want? And he searched me a couple more times. And I started getting very angry and agitated. And I'm knowing that she's probably at the house right now. My baby mom is probably at the house. And I know if I'm not there when she pulls up, that's going to be a whole nother problem. And mm-hmm. then I'm probably not going to be able to see him for God knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really angry. So all the other officer was telling me to calm down, be cool. And if you ain't got nothing to do with this, everything will be all right. And I'm like, all right. And so I just kind of pretty much stopped talking at that point. And I was heated, man. And I end up getting carted off to jail.
I read your book, and I remember your description of how it happened that night and what all the different things were going through your head. And you repeated to yourself, according to the book, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't have the dope. It wasn't mine. Right. And I didn't touch it. And if there's anything to do with my phone, I didn't have my phone.
Right.
But this, you then went through a court system.
Yep.
And not only in the state court system, but in the federal court system. And you ended up with a trial.
Yep.
And you were convicted.
Yep.
Of possession of crack.
Yep. With intent to deliver.
With intent to deliver. That's a serious felony.
Yes.
You went to prison. How long did you go for? What was the sentence?
My sentence was 10 years.
How much of that time did you do?
3 and some days.
What happened while you were in prison? What was this like? Well, let me tell you, I represented a guy who was convicted of murder. Mm-hmm. Second degree murder. He got 40 to 60. Mm-hmm. When he walked into prison, he thought he was in Jackson Prison, and what they call the birdcage in Jackson Prison is this huge seven-story building. And he said, I didn't do it, but I'm going to spend the rest of my life in this building. Mm-hmm. And he said it all hit him at that point when he walked in the door because he didn't do the crime. And we were later able to prove, after he was in prison for 14 years, mm-hmm. that he didn't do the murder, didn't have anything to do with it. Now, I know what he was like, and I'm going to tell you later on what he said and see if it matches with the two of you guys. But you went in, you were arrested, you were tried, you're convicted, you went to prison. You spent 3.5 years in prison, right?
Yep.
Did you know who arrested you?
Sure.
Who?
Surprise.
Yeah,
what was his name? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Andrew Collins.
Oh, man. Andrew Collins. Yeah. Oh, did you know? Had you known him before?
No.
He's just a guy off the street.
Yep.
All right. Yep. So, you got out. Yep. We're now going to start with Andrew's story, side of the story. Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
You got to Benton Harbor.
Yeah.
What happened?
I lost my damn mind. From the point of the academy on through the end of my career, I always wanted to be the best cop, the top cop. I didn't want to settle for just going to work and playing spades in the basement with all the other cops. I wanted to be out on the street making the city a better place, right? Like, that was my goal, was to make the city a better place. So early on in my career, I found drug enforcement as my niche. I didn't like drug dealers. I didn't like that they didn't seem to have to pay taxes on what they made. A lot of times I met drug dealers who were serving to their moms and dads as their primary clients. I just didn't like the culture at all. And so I made it my mission to go after drug dealers. And with that, right around the same time that I kind of keyed into that being my niche, I started letting my integrity slip as well.
All right. I'm going to tell you this. Having read your book,
mm-hmm.
I am going to, whenever I get a chance to talk to audiences of cops
yeah.
or prosecutors, I'm going to make sure they read it.
Yeah.
Because this hits at the heart of what
That's
I
right.
did for 25 years. The interrelationship between cops
yeah.
and prosecutors, the courts, and individuals who come before it mm-hmm. is very tough for all
yeah.
kinds of reasons. Both of you had a lousy times in your families growing up. It gave you the right to be bitter. And on the other hand, a lot of people have had big problems, bigger than yours and bigger than mine.
Right.
And they didn't end up in prison
right.
for whatever reason, righteously or wrongfully. All right? So, the night.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, so I caught a guy with some crack. He was just walking down the street, caught him with some crack, and gave him the ultimatum. You want to go home? You want to go to jail? And he said, I want to go home. That's an easy one, right? And I said, all right, get me something better. He had 7 grams on him, a quarter of an ounce. And I said, get me an ounce, and I'll let you go home. So he made a phone call and told me this is where we're going to meet at. It was a convenience store on the north side of the city. Said they're going to be driving this colored Durango. And, you know, the guy's name is Ox. And I said, oh, I've heard that name before. You know, so I reached out to the FBI and I said, hey, haven't you been looking for a guy named Ox? He said, oh, definitely. If you're targeting him, we want something to do with that. So I knew this was going to advance my career. It was all very ego-driven. Plus, I wanted to get some drugs off the street, right? So we get to the store and there's the Durango. And I walk up to the Durango and there was a guy sitting in the passenger seat. And he had some, I asked him immediately to step out of the vehicle, and he complied, but he had some physical disabilities. There was something wrong with his legs. And I knew that Ox didn't have any physical disabilities. I didn't know him personally, but I knew that wasn't his story. So I knew this was not my guy, right? So then all of a sudden this guy comes out of the store and starts walking towards the Durango, and I'm thinking, this has got to be him. This has got to be the guy I'm looking for. So I just approached that man as if he was Ox and he was my guy and he brought me the dope. So I approached the guy very arrogantly and said, give me the dope. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about, which wasn't uncommon in narcotics work for somebody to say they don't know what you're talking about. There are very, very few times with somebody like, okay, you got me. You know, there was usually mm-hmm. a little bit of a hassle to get the truth. So this guy was guilty until proven innocent. So I just continued to push through as if Ox was lying to me. Now, later I found out that Ox was actually Zuki, my friend here, Jamel. I had misidentified him and arrested him. I found drugs in the vehicle. There was really an ounce of crack cocaine brought to the scene. I didn't plant it. It was brought there. But I lied in the report and said that I saw the driver, who I identified as Ox. I saw him make a furtive gesture towards the center console where I later found the drugs. And I put Ox in the driver's seat, not coming out of the store. So I lied. Because I thought it was my job to bridge that gap for a judge, for a prosecutor, for a jury. I knew in my heart that the guy was guilty. Mm-hmm. It was my job to make sure that there was as little trouble as possible proving that.
Did you ever hear the phrase in police work, give me a warrant and I'll give you a confession?
Not personally, but I've heard, yes.
All right. Have you ever heard, didn't happen in the field, I'll take care of on the stand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those are the phrases that I heard used yeah. as a joke to
yeah.
me when I was an assistant prosecutor and a prosecutor. And in reading your book, it scared the bejesus out of me. All right?
The amount of power I had.
Yeah, and the fact that did I contribute, but when I was in a prosecutor's office, did I contribute to this?
Right,
because I trusted the police officer.
I had prosecutors from the same office you worked in who I would call them and say, I have a search warrant. And they say, is it the run-of-the-mill one? I said, yeah, there's nothing unique about it. They said, I'll just sign off on it. Didn't hear a word of it because they knew my style of writing warrants. So it was, is it your normal warrant? There's nothing unique about it. Nothing unique at all. Okay, put my name on it. Call the judge.
That's not, well, okay.
There's still an attorney there.
All right. I will, we're not here to identify other people.
No.
But the story is important to hear.
Yeah. It's a system that's broken.
All right. We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Andrew Collins and Jamel McGee, who wrote a book about their bad times and then their good times together, called Convicted. And I encourage people to read this book and I especially encourage prosecutors, assistant prosecutors, cops, bosses, and judges to read this story. This is John Smetanka, Run With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins. They are the co-authors of a book called Convicted, which deals with how one was the guy who was wrongfully convicted, went to prison for something he didn't do, and on the other side, the guy who put him there, who later on realized that his ego got away from him. Am I putting it too hard, guys?
I don't think that's hard enough.
All right. We'll get a little bit harder later. Anyway, this is John Smetanka. All right. So, Andrew, we know that your work that night put a guy in prison who didn't deserve to be there, right?
Correct.
All right. It didn't stop with that night, by the way.
No.
You testified in court wrongfully. You knew it was wrong, right?
Correct. Correct.
In front of a jury.
Correct.
Was he the only buddy that this happened to? Only person?
No.
How often? And what did you do?
As the dust settled at the end of my career and at the end of a civil lawsuit against the city of Benton Harbor, over 60 people's convictions were overturned.
That's 6-0.
6-0. My corruption was deep.
What happened to you?
February 2008, 2 years after I met Jamel, almost to the day, I got caught in my narcotics office with crack, heroin, and marijuana, which is it's a frowned upon offense in law enforcement.
You can't put it mildly.
You can't do things like that. So
can't do things like that.
That was the end of my career. So I tell people that was my 3-day journey. Caught on Tuesday, thought about killing myself Wednesday. And my wife came home, and she was working a part-time job at the time, and saw the despair on my face and said, you need to go talk to that pastor, because I had been kind of dabbling with church as an adult. So I sat down with a pastor friend the next day and told him everything I had done. And he had been a police officer before he was a pastor, so I felt like he would understand, not condone what I did, not be okay with what I did, but he would at least understand where I was coming from, because he knew the culture in this county and how quickly people can fall. So I shared the story with him, and he sat very patiently, about this far away from me, 4 or 5 feet. And after I was done, he said, "Whoo, boy, you're in trouble." And I remember thinking, he's the worst counselor in the world, because I knew I was in trouble, Yep. I said, "What's next? What do I do? How do I get out of this? How do I fix this?" And he asked me, "Where are you at with Jesus? Where are you at with God?" And that just led to just a reawakening of my faith that I had stepped into when I was 7 years old and kind of stepped away from later in life. I would have always told you that God was important to me, but my life would not have reflected it. I would have
Been in the demographic of Christian on a poll or something like that. But if you'd have looked at my life, there'd been no evidence of it. So that was like the beginning of getting me back, is having that conversation with that pastor. And it was very quickly after that. So that's 2 days out, 3 days out of getting caught. And already I was starting to gain back the old Andrew, the Andrew that loves justice, the Andrew that wanted to do things the right way. And that was almost immediately I said, I need to talk to the FBI and I need to right my wrongs.
So that's great. You began to find your proper footing again. What did you have to do, and did you suffer consequences to your own life and career as a result of what you did?
Yeah. So 10 months after getting caught, I was indicted by the FBI, same FBI office that I worked with here locally, same FBI agent who taught me a few corrupt things on his own. So it was a very awkward encounter going back in and sitting with him and then work through every case that I had ever handled with drugs. And through my attorney and through that interdiction, we were able to go through every case and clean up the ones that were bad.
All right. So and
one of those was Jamel's.
60, did you go to prison?
I did.
How long?
I was originally sentenced to 37 months. I was looking at 22 years originally, and then I just saw through the advocacy of my attorney and the softening of the judge's heart, I just saw the time go lower and lower until the day of my sentencing. I was supposed to have a mandatory minimum of 5 years, and he gave me 37 months. And then I got another time cut once I was in prison and ended up doing 18 months.
You came out, both of you came out, something happened. You knew, and Jamel, you knew him. Yeah. He took away 3.5 years of your life.
Yeah.
I presume that you, when you were in prison, looking around at the cells and whatnot and dealing with the people who were there, that you did have a lot of really positive feelings about Andrew Collins.
No.
All right.
I had no positive feelings about nobody, for real. Anybody that was in law enforcement. Just judges, prosecutors, attorneys, everybody.
Yep.
I just hated everybody.
Yep. Don't blame you. Yep. Now, what about you? You come out and what did you do with your life? Andrew, we're talk about you. What did you do with your life? And Jamel, we're going to ask the same question. Okay. How is it that the two of you guys crossed paths again? Who wants to go first?
All right. So I felt strongly called back to the Benton Harbor community when I got out of prison against the wishes of my wife and my pastor and everybody in my life. I just really felt drawn back to that city because I felt like I had a lot of apologies to make. So it was in the summer, I believe, of 2011. I'm in Broadway Park, south side of Benton Harbor. And there was my church was doing an outreach, Hoops, Hip Hop, and Hot Dogs. Right in the city where I'd done my wrong thing. So I'm standing there watching hundreds of kids have fun, hundreds of adults enjoy their time. It was really healing for me to see something good happening in this park because I had experienced some bad things in that park before. And then out of the crowd came this man who I knew as he was walking towards me or at me that I knew him and I knew that I had sent him to prison, but I couldn't remember his name. And as he got closer, he reached out his hand to shake my hand. And I remembered thinking like, oh, good, this is one of those interactions that I want, you know. And he grabbed a hold of my hand and said, you remember me? And immediately I remembered his name. I said, Jamel McGee. And as soon as I said his name, he gripped my hand and almost broke it. And it was very clear that this was not going to be the interaction I thought it was going to be. And he just looked down at a small boy who was with him and said, I want you to explain to my son why he missed out on years of his daddy's life. And there was, you know, a little toddler, Jakari, is standing next to him. And I said, man, there's nothing I can do to take back what I did to you. I was a horrible human being, and I'm so sorry for what I did. I'm sorry.
Jamel, how did this, is that what happened?
Yes.
Well, I almost sit up here live in front of him.
Yeah, that was it.
How hard did you squeeze his hand?
Oh, it was really hard.
No, we don't have to reenact it.
And that day for me was just, I had got to meet my son that day.
That day?
That same day.
Mm. Oh, boy.
And he wanted to go to the park. He seen all the kids and everybody over at the park. And I didn't want to go over there, but he did. So I was like, nah. But then I thought about, I didn't want to disappoint him, being this is our first time. And so I went on over and let him run through the park. And then I thought I saw Andrew over there at first. And I'm like, nah, that can't be him. Not in this park. I know he's just not going to be over there. And he turned around. And I was like, oh, boy, that's him. And I just beeline right over there to him. And that's when I stuck out my hand. I was like, hey, you remember me? And he was like, yeah. And as soon as he said my name, I locked down on his hand. And in my mind right there was just to hit him, just to get the ball rolling. And that's when also God stepped in and was like, nah.
All right. This, your story, the two of your stories are interesting on many different levels. We've already talked about street life, okay, with you, Jamil. Mm. With you, Andrew, you talked about law enforcement where your head went wrong.
Mm.
All right? That's on one level. And the fact that you could get back together and talk to each other without killing each other immediately, all right, is one story. But there's a next part of this story, which is what brought you to get to the point that you, Andrew, could come back to Benton Harbor and do something, try to do something to make up for what you did. And you, Jamil, could avoid killing him and actually form a relationship with him. What was the common denominator?
I would say God. I would say God. And then my willingness to let the hurt go, to let it all go. Because it would have been doing nothing but bringing more hurt, more pain on me. If I did decide to harm him or kill him, that was my life would have been back in those prison walls, and I'd have been away from my son probably even longer.
In the fellow I talked to you about earlier, that who is convicted of murder, was going to spend 40 to 60, got out at 14 when we proved he didn't do it. Court found that we proved he didn't do it. Mm. He was interviewed by a TV person, and after the interview was over, this reporter turned to him. He says, Larry, you know, are you bitter? Mm. Are you bitter about this? And Larry said something very interesting. He said, just what you said in a different set of words. He said, a long time ago, I got over being bitter because I realized that if I let myself be bitter, it would ruin the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want to do that. I just want to get on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
That was Larry Suter's comment. And he is a very simple guy, you know, truck driver, no priors. Wrong place at the wrong time, and a cop who was after him. Mm. I'll tell you, the things that cop did to get him were pretty bad.
Wow.
They're not best friends today?
No, he's dead. No. The Lord did not give him, that officer, the chance to have a meeting like yours.
Mm-hmm. So he passed while he was in prison?
He passed while he was in prison.
Hmm.
Wow. And I, to this day, I don't know anything about his status. But at any rate, how did you come? I want to make this as non-religious or religious statement as possible. All right? I've heard a lot of people over the years that I put away or I talked to when they were defending him. And they found Jesus. They found God. I mean, how many people are out there?
See a lot of people that find Jesus till their appeal comes back.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, they're back out. And
then they're atheists.
But apparently, you guys made it over the edge. Mm. And you're now out and living your life. Jamil, you're with your son, who is sitting here, by the way, watching this. And he's in his football uniform. Just came from practice. And So he, did he play any part?
Oh, most definitely.
What did he, what did your son play? What part did he play?
He played the I'm going to say the majority of it, because if he had not been born or alive, I would probably still be in prison for life or dead. He was my reasoning for wanting something better for my life, so I can give him something better in his.
All right. Andrew, what about you?
What role did Jakarius play in my life?
Jakarius, you may have changed everything for both their lives. I don't know.
Right.
And actually, in a way, they probably you probably did. But what got you on, I don't even say the straight and narrow, what got your head straight again?
Yeah, definitely my faith. Like I said, I grew up in the church, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. But it was religious. It was all about religion. It was all about the right acts to appease the pissed off God. And this interaction with me and my faith became more of being overwhelmed by His grace, made me want to live a sweeter life, made me want to live a more honest life. It wasn't trying to stack up right acts so that I could get in, if you will, but it was more of, I was so overwhelmed with His grace through this situation when I knew I did not deserve grace from anyone, that has drawn me to a place where I want to show that grace to others. I want to show that love to others. And I want desperately for everybody to feel the love that I felt at my lowest. And Jamel is just a reminder of that to me. Like, I would have had that experience without this experience with Jamel. But every time he says, "What's up, bro?" And we give each other a hug, it's like a reminder of the grace that has been afforded to me that I don't deserve.
All right. Jamel, when we come back, we're going to talk to you some more about your how you perceive what's happened to you in addition to your son. Mm-hmm. But right now we're going to take a break. We're talking to Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins, who are the authors of a book called Convicted, about Jamel's being arrested and convicted and gone to prison for something he didn't do, and Andrew helping to put him there wrongfully. This is John Smetanka, running With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Jamel McGee and Andrew Collins, supported, I might add, by his son, who is sitting here in his football uniform. This is John Smetanka. Now, Jamel, you laughed, and both of you guys laughed, and I laughed when we talked about everybody gets God and Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. when they're in prison or about to go to prison. And it lasts until the door closes as they're walking out.
Yes.
All right. How about you?
Yes.
What did motivate you to make this, aside from your son, or in addition to your son, what moved you?
Well, yeah, I was in a rough place, a dark place in there, and I began to hurt people in there. And I realized that I'm only hurting these people because I've been hurt. And
this is in prison?
This is in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted something different for my life. I didn't want to be in there for the rest of my life either. So that, along with God, the religion part of it, is I said I wasn't going to lean on God because I'm in jail, because I did that all the other times I got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I'm not going to do that. And then one day I was sitting in my cell 3 years into my sentence, and the Bible was sitting on my desk, and I never touched it the whole time I've been here. Never even just tried to. But this day I just said, you know what, I'm going to start and read the Bible. And I started in the first 5 verses of Genesis, and my mind just went blank. And God just stepped in, was just telling me to let this go. Like, this is, you know, that was my sign to let it go, to let all this stuff go. There's nothing I can do to change it, you know what I'm saying? But I can do something different, how I go about it. And I just kept pushing to, from that point on, I just kept pushing to do something different. Because if I keep doing the same things, the same results is going to show. So I wanted to do something different, not only for my son, but let me say this too. God has not only took that thought of hurting him and other people out of my mind, but he also gave me the tools not only to be a father, but to be a father to many.
In what way? All right, now we're going to talk about what happened. What have you guys done with your experience? So, Jamal.
My experience is in there. I'm trying to teach all our youth and some of our adults that will listen how not to get to this point. And if they do get into a situation like this, how not to just go rogue. You know what I'm saying? Not just to be on the negative page and let it just beat you all the way down. You can get back up from this. That's what I want to show the world, pretty much. Like, you can get back up. You can move on, even with the people that you think that harmed you. You know, in doing that, you open so many doors for yourself, and not only for yourself, but for the kids and the adults that's looking up to you. You know, they see it and they like, man, how can I do that? And it's just amazing right now to see their actions and their reactions to things now since I'm in their life. Most of them, since I'm in their life, or I had talked to them and shared my experiences with them and where I've been. And they were like, oh, man, I don't want to go through all that. Or I'm not going through that, but I recognize what you went through, and I'm holding this or beating myself up for this when I could just very well just leave it alone and walk away and do something different with my life. And that's what I chose to do, and that's what I'm trying to teach our kids, is to do something different with our life. And our choices, our decisions mean a lot. They affect our future, you know, because mine, every decision I ever made affected my future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get them the ball early, you know.
Are you working with a particular group of people, organization right now?
Not any particular. I'm all over. But mm-hmm. I do have a dance group through one of my mentors, Asia, called Dansation, and the other kids at the park that I started a park program to, a mentorship in the park, a year or so back ago, and those kids still come around, and it's just they became my kids.
Okay, Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, so right now I work for Young Life, which is a international nonprofit youth ministry. So instead of asking kids to come to church and go to youth group, we go to them. So we had three leaders at a St. Joe High School swim meet last night, had a couple leaders at a Lakeshore High School tennis match last night. And then every Monday night we get together and have something we call club, which is just a big party with a purpose. So 45 minutes of crazy, zany teenage energy with their adult friends, and then a 15-minute gospel-centered message. So building teams of adults who want to be in kids' lives in a positive way.
Okay, so I've already told you that I want to take your story and have everybody read it.
Yes.
All right? What do you want me to say to those people that I deal with? What words do you want me to use that will tell the story in one sentence or two sentences?
Mm. All right. Yeah, to your white friends, I would say, if you don't believe in white privilege, read this book. And to your black friends, I would say, I'm sorry I've been ignorant to the plight of your people. Read this book.
All right. Jamel?
I would say, the book, I would say this give you an overall understanding of life. And not only that, but this is not a story out the Bible, moving, living story.
You should say that again sometime. That was good.
Let me. All right, because the two of you are still talk to each other, or is this all for show? I mean, you guys are laughing it up now. Is this seriously friends? I mean, come on, seriously.
We had dinner at each other's house. Yes. We got plans for him to help me work on the brakes of my car. Because it was supposed to be a day. We forgot about this stuff. I mean, we're heading out of town next week to go speak to 500 kids in the center of Michigan somewhere that we've never been to, Goebbels, Michigan. So, yeah. Goebbels. Yeah, so we're in each other's lives.
Well, I tell you, I go back to my friend who was my client before and is my friend now. And he spent 14 years for a murder he didn't commit. And it took a long time to get him out, 7 years. There are even some people today, one person today who sees me periodically and says, you got that murderer out on a technicality, which is not true. In fact, the judge who overturned the conviction told me personally afterwards that it was the most important decision she'd ever made in her life.
Yeah.
And that his case is now national authority on actual innocence for people convicted of wrongfully convicted of crimes. And so that experience, that 14 years, has made a big difference, not only for himself, but also for many people with similar situations around the country. So, my suggestion to the two of you is keep it up, because you'd be surprised how the little things that you do with one person you meet on the street can make a difference for their life. And whether you get even the joy of knowing you made a difference in their life, you don't even know.
Right.
You just don't know who is going to read this book. Who's going to know the two of you? Who's going to run to your son and hear from him about the real life, how things move? Mm. And so I urge people to read this book. I think it is very worthwhile. But in addition to that, I think that we all need, and I certainly need, to reflect on my life and see if I've done anything which neglectfully has put somebody wrongfully in prison. Mm. So, you know, it was a difficult read for me.
Yeah.
May not be for other people because they weren't prosecutors or they aren't cops.
Right.
But it was for me.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, this was fun in a way.
Yes, it was.
And I say fun because I got a chance to talk to two interesting people who are making a difference in people's lives are obviously still good friends, surprisingly. I'm amazed at that. And as I say, we're doing good things for other people. So, gentlemen, thank you for coming on my show. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect. And we are going to have our show next week. And remember, until then, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.